Today is our fifth Sunday in a six-week series on key passages from Paul's second letter to the Corinthians. In chapter 11, Paul has compared his ministry with others who have apparently put forward some very impressive credentials. We will begin reading in chapter 12, verse 1, where Paul offers what may be a satirical version of a spiritual experience. Those who wish to follow in the Pew Bibles should please turn to page 226 in the New Testament. Let us listen for what the Spirit is saying to us today. It is necessary to boast. Nothing is to be gained by it. But I will go on to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a person in Christ who, 14 years ago, was caught up to the third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that such a person, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows, was caught up into paradise and heard things that are not to be told, that no mortal is permitted to repeat. On behalf of such a one, I will boast, but on my own behalf, I will not boast, except of my weaknesses. But if I wish to boast, I will not be a fool, for I will be speaking the truth. But I refrain from it, so that no one may think better of me than what is seen in me or heard from me, even considering the exceptional character of the revelations. Therefore, to keep me from being too elated, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from being too elated. Three times I appealed to the Lord about this, that it would leave me. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong." May God add understanding to this reading of the Word.
The Boy Who Came Back from Heaven is the story of Alex Mullarky, written by his father, Kevin. In 2004, the two of them were in a car crash that totaled the vehicle, that left him, Alex, 2 months in a coma and left him quadriplegic. But when he woke up from that coma, according to the book, he told stories of visions of heaven, of seeing angels, of seeing Jesus. He gave all kinds of details about the life after death. And the book sold rather well. And Christian publishers realized that there was a market for that. And more books came out. And some movies were made. Alex is now in his early 20s. He is still quadriplegic. And he has recanted. He has said it didn't happen. He said, "My father pressured me. My father kind of manipulated it. We don't talk to him anymore. He's suing his publisher. It's a mess." Now, I want to hasten to add, my point here is not to debunk this kind of story. Those other versions, those other stories, those other books and movies are still out there. The one you've probably heard of, if you've heard of one of them, is a very similar story. Heaven is real, right? That's still out there. We still have those stories. My point is not to debunk this kind of story. My point here is to say how much we want to know. We want to know what life there is beyond this life, and we want to know what it's like. We want somebody to have gone and come back or to have gotten close so that they can tell us what it's like. Because as David's song said, otherwise we can only imagine. And we recognize the poverty of our imagination. Those stories are out there. They give us hope. They should give us hope. But oh, how we want to know, and we want details, don't we? Paul says he's been there, but he's not going to tell. And if you've gotten to know Paul at all, you really shouldn't be surprised. Honestly, the most obnoxious of the apostles, I just have to say. He says, I know a man. Our translation is very polite, I know a person, but he's really, I know a man. And he's undoubtedly talking about himself. I don't know about you, but Steve Feetz really doesn't like people who speak of themselves in the third person. He gets really bugged by that. It seems very pretentious. That's how Steve Feetz feels about it. He says, I know a man. Is he trying to kind of some modesty? I don't know. But he says, I know a man. Later on, in a little bit, he talks about himself. So here he's talking about himself. I know a man who was caught up into the third heaven. Not the seventh heaven, not cloud nine, the third heaven. I know a man who was caught up into the third heaven, who was caught up into paradise. Persian word for the afterlife, for the ideal life. But he's murky in the details. There's that little interjection that he does, whether in the body or out of the body, I don't know, God knows. Whether in the body, out of the body, I don't know, God knows. Oh, hush. And he says, I can't share. I mean, what? Why can't he share? Doesn't he understand there could be a bestseller for him in this? Just share. But he doesn't. There's a context for this. Paul has been dealing with what he calls uper apostoloi, super apostles, opponents of his in Corinth, who have been undermining, who have been questioning his authority, his authenticity, his gospel, his message. They've been challenging him. He calls them peddlers, implying that they are not authentic, strongly suggesting that they're just in it for the money that they get, and reasserting, you know, I took no money from you, remember? He calls them name droppers. People who need letters of recommendation before anybody would really pay attention to them. So they bring this big, long list of people who recommend them. But more than anything, he calls them self-promoters. People who are always putting themselves forward. People who are always boasting, always lifting up all their great achievements. All the things that they've been able to do. All the things that in human terms, human beings would find very impressive. It's how Paul characterizes these self-promoters. Probably they were padding their sermons with PowerPoint and Greek words and dumb jokes, you know the type. Super apostles. And in contrast with their habits, with their ways of presenting themselves, Paul presents his own story, his own resume, his own CV. And now when he does this, he's doing this against the backdrop not only of what the super apostles are saying about themselves to aggrandize themselves, he's doing so against a standard expectation of something that was done in his world. In the Greco-Roman world, it was not unusual for people who wanted to put themselves forward to really exaggerate, to really emphasize all the incredible things that they'd done, all the incredible characteristics they'd had, all the wonderful people they'd worked with. You would think they were running for president or something, right? So it was a standard kind of thing in one of these biographies to talk about your education, your training, who you had served under, whom you had learned from, what your experience was. Harvard Business School, summa cum laude, you know. And in contrast to that, Paul says, been in jail a few times. Cell block D, summa cum tattoos, you know. It was a standard kind of thing to talk about the victories that you had had, maybe heroic physical victories in battle, or maybe mental, intellectual victories in some kind of debate, to lift up all the things that you had won, all the plaudits that you had received. In contrast, Paul itemizes the beatings that he's had. Well, I had 5 of this kind of beatings and 3 of that kind of beatings, and I got stoned once. Bob Dylan wrote a song about that, but never mind. The standard expectation was that a person would put themselves forward as having had heroic valor, having faced frightening situations and having overcome them with just a superhuman, super apostolic ability. Paul sounds more like the robot from Lost in Space. Just to read from chapter 11. I experienced danger from rivers, danger from bandits, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger from the sea, danger from false brothers, danger in the wintertime, danger in the summertime, danger, 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 danger. Nothing but danger. And his response to the danger, heroic character, not insomnia. Sleepless nights because of all the danger and all the pressure that was put on me and all the anxiety that came up because of all that pressure. Paul's resume, in contrast to. Now, probably we can relate to that kind of resume. If we were really honest about the kind of resume that we had in life, it might look more like that. And it's a moment where maybe we have something in common with Paul. My concern is I'm also mindful that I have something in common with the super apostles. Resume Steve and reality Steve don't always seem to be the same Steve. Maybe you have that experience too. The things that we put forward and the things that we withhold, there can be that kind of resume gap, you know? In reality, of course, the things that we hold on to and the things that we put forward are all part of our reality. But there's just that tendency to want to make a good impression. And there is that tendency sometimes to disappoint. I don't know about you, but there is resume Steve. And there is what sometimes feels like reality, Steve. Maybe that's true of you as well. So then, that's chapter 11. At this point, Paul then goes on to the supernatural. I will now move on to visions and revelations. You see, the standard would have been to put forward your background, your education, the people you learned from, to put forward the debates, the victories that you had won, to put forward all the situations that you had overcome because of your remarkable character and ability. And then the standard would finish up with a revelation from one of the gods. Greeks, Romans, others would have gone and Apollo or Venus or one of the gods would have given that person a revelation, a message that they then share with everyone. So Paul gets to this point in his version of things, and this is where he says, I don't know some pretty major details, and I'm not allowed to repeat what I heard, and oh, by the way, if I get too excited about it, it hurts. It's painful for me. You see how he's playing off expectations, how he's putting himself forward in a very different way. There's been a lot of wondering about that thorn in the flesh. There's been all kinds of speculation. What does Paul mean when he says he has a thorn in the flesh? But we don't know what he means by that either, because he doesn't tell us. He just puts it out there. But what does come afterwards is a revelation. Not about heaven, I would say a pretty profound revelation about human character, about human behavior. Simply this: I refrain from boasting so that no one should think better of me than what is seen in me and heard from me. What a remarkable concept that we would be so authentic that what people see and what they hear is who we are. What omissions would we make in our behavior? What omissions would I make in my behavior if it was just a matter of what you see and what you hear is who I am? I think that's a revelation. It's not a revelation about heaven, necessarily, but it certainly is a revelation about how we might live in the light of who we are, to eliminate that gap between the resume self and the so-called real self. Then, in talking about the things that he cannot say, he does talk about having a real revelation. I took that thorn in the flesh to the Lord and I said, please, please, please. And he talks about a word from Jesus. My grace is sufficient for you. My no-strings love for you, freely given, completely unearned, is enough. What if I could stop trying to make an impression? What if I no longer had anything to prove? What if it didn't bug me that there's a white strip up there that I didn't put in? What if I had nothing to prove ever again? What if God's unmerited, unimaginable love for me really was sufficient? What if it really is enough? What if the part of me that knows that, believes that, lives that sometimes, knew that, believed that, lived that all the time? How would things be different? For my power is perfected in weakness, the revelation says. Jesus is telling us that he shows up in our lack. Jesus will show up in our need. He will show up in our struggle. His strength, his power, is not there just to augment the stuff we're already good at, though those are gifts from God also. It's there for our weakness. It's there for our need. And when our weakness can be submitted to that power, then that power is all the more revealed. I think it goes something like this. If I were to sum this up, I think Paul is telling us, I can't tell you what heaven looks like. That's beyond my ability. But I can show you what God has done in my life. It's true of Paul. On good days, it's true of me. I would bet lunch that it's true of you also. If you go to a 12-step meeting, and let me just stand up here and say, I suggest you go to a 12-step meeting. If you are that rare person who does not struggle with addiction to alcohol or another drug, if you are that rare person who has no loved ones in your life, so you don't who struggle with addiction, so you don't need to go to Al-Anon or Nar-Anon or one of those support groups for people like that. If you're one of those rare people who doesn't have anybody in your life, my guess is, I know I am, maybe you are, nonetheless addicted to making an impression. If you go to a 12-step group, what you will do is you will hear people, one after the other, confess all the various ways they managed to make a mess of their lives, and then all the different ways that their higher power has helped them with that mess, has moved them through that mess, has guided them in their recovery, their continuing recovery from that mess. My power is perfected in weakness. A little over 20 years ago, we lost my brother-in-law, we lost Janie's brother, Jimmy, to a heroin overdose. And at the time, we faced a choice, right? We could do what a lot of families do very understandably. We could say, this is personal. This is private. Parentheses, this feels a little shameful. This feels like a failure. And not tell anyone. We decided to share it with the congregation we were serving at the time, and here's what happened. We got story after story after story of people in that community who had loved ones or who were themselves people who struggled with addiction. We got all kinds of stories that we would not have gotten had we not shared our own struggle, our own need, our own pain. My power, the Lord says, is perfected in weakness. A more mundane example. I don't like it when I make a mistake. Steve spends a remarkable amount of energy avoiding the revelation of mistakes I might make, avoiding the mistakes in the first place, and then when they happen, figuring out some way to avoid somebody pointing it out, commenting on it, or even knowing about it in the first place. I can hide those things. I can humble brag about it, you know. Okay, well, I booked 3 meetings all at the same hour, not because I'm incompetent in my calendaring, but because I'm just too busy. Or because I was thinking about God a lot. I wasn't thinking about 7 p.m. on Monday. Sorry. Or I can say, I messed up. And I can rely on God to move through other people to help me with my mistakes. And I can rely on other people to forgive me for my mistakes. And to share their own and recognize that God's power is perfected in my weakness. So, what is it for you? Heaven, I don't know about you, I can only imagine. The song's right. You can only imagine. If you got something better than that, I'd like to know. But that's where I am. But I know I can on a good day, and maybe more profoundly on a bad day, talk about, show what God has done in my life. What does that look like? What would that sound like if you were telling, if you were showing? I'd like to see that.